Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I am joined today by an NFL offensive line coach who I'm sure you've heard of and have seen his stuff out there, Paul Alexander. Paul, it's great to have you here.
Hi, Keith. Hey. Hi. I'm going to enjoy this talking about football, the game we both love so much, to all the coaches and players that are listening today.
Coach, several things I want to talk to you about here. Before we get into some of that, I just want to learn a little bit about your journey in coaching. I mean, I told you before we got started, my first knowledge of you in the coaching profession was through an old VHS tape where you were wearing some bike coaching pants and talking about hands blocking. So that was some time back. But your journey into coaching, what was it, Paul, that really spurred you on to be a coach?
You know, I think I always knew I wanted to be either a teacher or a coach. Pretty sure in junior high, I decided it was going to be a coach. I just really enjoyed the relationship that coaches had with kids, and found it to be something I wanted to do. And I think that's why I went into coaching. And really, if I didn't coach, I'd be a teacher. You know, so some guys would be, selling real estate. Other people would be accountants. I don't know. If I weren't a football coach, I'm sure I'd be a science teacher somewhere.
And in thinking of what you wrote in your book, Perform, A Journey for Athletes, Musicians, Coaches, and Teachers, that was really at the heart of it, was teaching. I think that throughout there, you could call it coaching, but really what it boiled down to is you talked a ton about teaching and essentially all the different classrooms from the music room to the football field.
Yeah, here's the story. At age 48, I have a daughter, Carolyn, who just graduated from the Berklee College of Music, so she's a very talented musician. But when she was in fourth grade, they told her that she was too talented playing the piano, and she had to go study at the conservatory at University of Cincinnati. So she goes there, and they match her up with this world-famous concert pianist, Albert Muehlbach. And oh my God, he's from Austria. He plays all over the world. He's a jet setter. He's unbelievable. And so Carolyn, fourth grade daughter, very quiet, is intimidated. And she's intimidated by his accent. He's a great guy. She was intimidated by how good he was. And she wanted to quit. I said, no, you can't quit. Why don't we do it together? You do a half an hour, I'll do a half an hour. Now, I hadn't played the piano, really. I tinkered around a little bit, but never really played, and said, okay. And so we did that for a number of years. And believe it or not, 10 years later, I still take piano lessons. I can play concert-level music. I play in front of crowds. They like to get up and leave. No, but and it worked out well for my daughter. But really, the whole learning about how this great concert pianist performs, overcomes the anxiety of performing, how he learns, how he trains, and then all the different observations I've had over the years about great players, great performers, great coaches, great teachers, and how people learn is what became this book. The book was called Perform. And it was a lot of fun. It's 57 little stories that basically, some are humorous, some are gut-wrenching, some will make you laugh, some will make you cry, some will make you throw the book in the trash, others will make you pull it out. But it's 57 stories that basically become all a principle that's a theory of an application of something that works in teaching, coaching, learning, performing. And so that's really what the book was that you referenced. And I had a lot of fun writing it. I wrote it the year of the lockout. We had no players. You know what I mean? I had nothing to do. Some people say that that's the best coaching job there is when there's no players. You know, I guess it's like being a doctor with an empty waiting room. I guess that's probably a pretty good gig too. But anyways, that's when I wrote it. It was a lot of fun. And I'm going to have a year off and kind of breathe some fresh air. And I'm writing a second book, which will be a lot of fun.
I do want to share a couple things from your book that impacted me as a coach. And one of the first ones, in my offensive line coach, I guess, summarize this one. He pulled this out in a meeting when we were talking to the players. And it was where you were talking about your job. And in a couple quotes from there, my job is to replace each of you with someone better. And then you go on and offer a little explanation as well as something that's encouraging to them. You say, if you become a better player yourself, then I've replaced you. We are a better team. And I think that really encapsulates what we're trying to do when we coach, especially those guys who, you know, at the college level, we only get them, you know, for 4 years, but there's a lot of turnover at your level as well. But I think that's exactly it. The way we're going to become a better team is that each of those individual pieces have to become better, have to perform.
We do. I start out my meeting every year in training camp, and the older guys know what's coming. It's the first thing I tell them. The younger guys about crap their pants when I say it. I look them in the eye and say, my number one job is to replace you. And they look at me like, what a jerk. And I say, now I can replace you with another player, or I can replace you by you becoming a better player yourself. And like you say, that's the message I give. And that's really the message I'm always working for. I'm kind of always proud at the end of the year when you can see your guys get better. And I think, the joy in coaching is a cumulative compilation of successes, you know, starting in training camp and going all the way up through the end of the year.
Coach, the other part that my offensive line coach adopted, I'd go into his walkthroughs that he'd have down the hallway in the gym, and I'd see all these players just pounding the ground hard. I mean, it was echoing throughout the gym floor, and he took that from one of your chapters or sections called Pounded Movements, and that was something that you picked up through learning the piano. So can you talk us through, and I've actually shared this idea a few times on the podcast, but talk us through walkthrough.
Let me talk about three things. Pounded movements, slow speed learning, and then the final thing, the rule of five, which I didn't write about in the book, but I can't wait to write about it. The first thing is pounded movements. So there's something that your brain has to tell your body, your foot, your hand to move exactly here, ready, set, now. And it's through that muscle memory, that those firing of nerves from your brain to your foot or hand and then back to your brain, a feedback loop which builds the muscle memory and the habit. And you have to do that over and over and over again. Everyone knows you have to build habits, right? Well, how do you do it? Well, I think first, not only when you learn it, but when you've mastered it, you have to be able to do it at exceptionally slow speed. If you can't do something perfectly at slow speed, then it's impossible to do it at fast speed. A player who's playing in the Super Bowl this week, who played for me for 11 years, Andrew Whitworth, a great player, he'd go out on the practice field every day, and you'd see Witt out on the field all by himself. Everyone was already in there eating lunch, but he'd already be out there. He's sweating already, and he's going through techniques incredibly slow over and over and over again, feeling your balance, feeling your step, feeling your weight distribution, feeling, you know, exactly how to coordinate. And like I said, that important thing, well, I get the image from a great pianist named Vladimir Horowitz, who once said, my fingers are the army and I'm the general and I command them. Well, you do that. He does that playing the piano, but you do that as an athlete. You know, you train your hand to punch this way exactly now. You don't let your hand take control of your head. And then through that training, it eventually becomes a habit. And then once you have that, all right, I'm going to add a fourth thought in here, all right, a fourth thought that I call a one thought, all right? And one thought is this. It's a story that goes back. I used to play a lot of golf, Keith, before I was married, of course, and when I was a young guy. And I don't know, I could shoot 85 most days and for 18 holes. And I go out and I decided, you know, I'm going to get really good at golf. I'm going to take golf lessons and I'm going to go ahead and do that. So I take a couple weeks of golf lessons and I went from 85 to about 120. I could not hit the damn ball at all. I mean, those lessons I had, that guy had me think, it was great. He had me think of a thousand things, you know, my overhand grip, you know, keep my elbow in, don't sway, swing inside out, finish high, you know, blah, 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 turn, don't sway, you know, thousands of things that you think about. And golfers have those thousands of images. But I got to the point where I was thinking about so many things that I literally could not hit the ball. So what did I do? I was coaching at the University of Michigan at that time, and I went to the old golf pro, Tom Simon, a crusty, old, beautiful, grouchy man. And I said, Tom, I can't hit the ball. I literally cannot hit the ball. He said, what are you talking about? He said, hey, follow me. So we go out on the golf course. And Tom says, all right, start swinging that club like it's a baseball bat. And I said, Tom, I thought, yeah. He said, shut up, God damn it. You know, thinking that's supposed to swing like a baseball bat. So I start swinging the thing like a baseball bat. And he says, and I'm swinging. And he says, now I want you to visualize you've hit a home run and the ball has gone right over the fence. I want you to stand up and watch that ball fly over the fence. So I did it. And then I followed through in the classic golfing pose with your hands high, your buckle turned towards the flag, you know, in the standard balance pose. He says, all right, you feel that? I said, yeah. He says, all I want you to do is I want you to think about that and hit the ball. So then I get in front of the ball, get my 5-iron, dress the ball, and I hit that thing on the screws. I mean, I hit that thing as solid as you could hit it. And so the ball, it jumps off. He says, now I want you to do it again. So I did it again. Do it again. Don't think about anything. Again, again, again. So I kept doing this over and over and over again, thinking about one thing. That was as dramatic a moment in my coaching development as any moment in my life. I learned a couple things. One, it is single thoughts and images that you have to train that get your body directed to do it consistently, correctly. So I might have several techniques. If I think about the one thought, it might be low, it might be wide base, but whatever it is, if I think about that over and over in that situation, then no matter what, no matter how nervous I am in the game situation, no matter how bad I'm playing, no matter how good he is, no matter how I feel, if I think about that one thought and nothing else, then I'll be able to consistently produce that. And so many times when someone does it right, we sit there as coaches and we'll say, hey, good job, next guy. No, that's what I decided that day. When someone does something right, the first thing I do is I say, what were you thinking? I don't know, coach. I was thinking about staying low. All right. Well, let's do it. Do it again. think about nothing but stay low. And again, stay low. 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 And they develop those habits because it's if a guy gets up there and he does it three times and then he finally gets it right on the fourth time, and you say, okay, end of the line, next guy, what has he learned? Well, he's learned 75% of the time how to do it wrong. What you have to do is once someone has mastered a skill, is right then is the moment when you have to reinforce it over and over and over again to develop those neural pathways to execute it properly and learn. So that takes me to my last thought, the rule of five. I haven't talked about the rule of five. The rule of five is well known in piano pedagogy, right? And what it is when you get a hard piece of music and you think you've finally got it down, go ahead and try it five times. See if you can do it. All right. So you'll do it once. Great. One, second time. Great. Third time. Great. Fourth time. Great. Fifth time. Great. Oh, geez, I screwed up. And that usually happens sometimes between the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh time, whatever, somewhere in there, rule of five, somewhere in there, you did it wrong. And what's amazing, you know immediately what you did wrong. Your body will tell you what you've done wrong. I coached a guy, Kevin Zeitler, who plays for the Cleveland Browns now. He's a right guard. He's one of the best guards in football. Kevin had trouble on a TE twist of snapping it off properly. All right. Well, we said, all right, God damn it, Kevin, we're staying out here. We're going to work on it. So everyone went in. And I said, we're going to get this. And when we get it, we're going to do the rule of five. All right. So we finally got it. All right. And over and over and over again. And I said, okay, here we go. Five times. Let's do it five times. And I'll be sure as can be, he did it four times perfectly. And on the fifth time, he screwed up. And I said, what'd you do wrong? He said, I turned my inside knee. He felt it. Mm-hmm. He knew. I said, okay, here we go. Now let's train it. Think about nothing but keeping your inside knee straight. Again, again, inside knee straight, again, inside knee straight, again, inside knee straight, again, over and over and over again. And he finally got it. And that problem he had went away. And he was able to cure it. And it was a long story there, but those are the kind of things I enjoy. You know, I love teaching. I love, whether it's football or playing the piano or whatever, there's such a joy when a person is confronted with something that they're frustrated with. And not only do they get it, but they master it. And I like being a part of that.
And I think those are some really good points, especially, well, I think, I wouldn't say just the younger coaches. I think coaches at any level, you know, you sometimes get ingrained in what you're doing and need to be reminded of that. But the practice just isn't about, you know, we got to run through these drills every day. It's finding that purpose within each single drill, within each single rep, and helping your players discover more about what they're doing and their performance. And I think that's what you point out there with that story.
Yeah, we're not, their dads can tell them, hey, good job, you finally got it right, next guy. Their dad can tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
Their coach can make sure that it wasn't a one-off, but it was actually something they learned. And I think those moments we have to capture and grab those and really realize how important they are.
Coach, another concept you talked about in your book, and these are relatively short stories. Like you said, I think, 57 of these where you share an idea and kind of back that up with a story?
They're kind of, you should put them right on top of the Reader's Digest in the bathroom. You know what I mean? You kind of, you know, they're kind of like a one-page thing, and great, you know. And I've done podcasts of those myself. I just released them over the weekend. In fact, I have a podcast channel. It's called Football Beyond by Coach Paul Alexander. And I'm doing that a lot. I've put out 11 of them. I announced it on my Twitter.
Okay.
My Twitter is at Coach Paul Alex. And it's kind of fun. I enjoy that. It's kind of almost like an audio book or whatever. But a number of these, I haven't covered those things on that yet. I've covered some other things, but I enjoy doing these things.
Well, I enjoyed the one called Proactive Performance, and the idea that athletes can perform reactively or proactively, and you gave some examples throughout, but talk to us about working with your guys to make them proactive players. How do you accomplish that?
Yeah, let's take an example. Let's talk about pass protection. In order for a blocker to be proactive, and what does proactive mean? It means that I set in my spot and I determine what I want the rusher to do to me, and based on what I have allowed him to do, I know how to react. In the front of my meeting last year, I went and bought the biggest mirror I could find, big stand-up wooden mirror, and I put it right in the front of the room. And every day, while they were watching film off to the side of the screen, with the chalkboard on the other side, was this big, huge mirror. And it was a constant reminder of, you have to know what you're showing the man you're playing against. He's looking at you. And based on what you tell him in your body posture is how he's going to react, right? I'm not sure we always think of it that way, but it's true. All right, so basically a proactive blocker in pass, they do it in run too, but I'll use that example right now. In pass, they set to a spot, you know, a couple kick slides, right? Let's say that's their spot. And based on that, and knowing the angle that they're setting and the angle that the rusher is going to take to the quarterback, they force that guy to rush on a certain line, right? And based on your reads when you get to the spot, you know what to do. That's being proactive. Reactive is kind of like when I played as a young guy in college, my coach, who I loved, and it was common then, but he said, hey, I believe there's a camera in your butt, and I point your camera at that quarterback and just keep moving your feet and stay in front of him. Now, it's kind of weird, right? Concept in itself. But more than that, it's a reactive blocker. Me playing mirror dodge and reacting to all your moves is not as effective as being like an NBA forward who knows how to cover the paint and force the defender in a direction he wants him to go, an offensive player in the direction he wants to go. That, to me, is being a proactive blocker. And you do that in pass, you do it in run, you do it with footwork, you do it with angles, you do it with timing, and all those things, and that allows you to play that way.
And you mentioned a story with, and actually the little chapter is called The Freak, but your guy had to block Javon Kearse, and he shared with you his thought process and how he would get that done. I thought that was an interesting story, if you wanted to share that.
Yeah. That one's coming up on a podcast here in a week or so called Lessons from Willie. I coach this great player, Willie Anderson, all-pro player, certainly should be in the – he's a final – he was in the top 100, I think, for the Hall of Fame, but he should have made the top 25. I'm hoping he gets in there someday. He was a great all-pro player for me. And Willie used to play against Javon Kearse, the Freak, right? And he played against him a dozen times. The Freak, now, never, not once, ever beat Willie Anderson for a sack. Now, the Freak was the NFC Defensive Player of the Year once. He led the league in sacks a bunch of times. He was the best rusher in the league at that time. Think about that. A dozen times he played against him, no sacks. Well, can you imagine the best pass rusher in the league going 12 games without a sack in a season? My God, it'd be terrible, right? So obviously Willie dominated him. I said to Willie towards the end of his career, I said, how come the freak never beats you. What'd you do to the freak? He said, you want to know the truth? I said, yeah. He said, well, the truth is I never looked at him. I said, what do you mean you never looked at him? What are you talking about? He said, I never looked at him. I said, well, why didn't you look at him? He said, are you kidding me? He's a freak. If I looked at him, I'd screw up and beat me. I said, well, tell me what you did. He said, well, I got in the huddle. I looked at the ground. I heard the play called. I went to the line, still looking at the ground. I blocked him, didn't look at him, turned around, went back to the huddle. And here it was, one of the greatest players to ever play the game, Willie Anderson, telling me that he could block him, but if he let the other guy intimidate him, it would crack his armor. So what does that tell us? Well, we all play and coach players who play against players that are better than them. Happens all the time. Well, if you get intimidated, the difference between a great rusher in the NFL and just another rusher is that great rushers in the NFL, if you make, and I'm sure it's the same at any level, if you make a mistake as a blocker, a great rusher will beat you flat out. Great rusher's not going to miss it. They don't miss 2-foot putts. If you make a mistake, they're going to beat you. Well, how do you block a great rusher? Don't make a mistake. And how don't you make a mistake? Well, don't let the other guy intimidate you to the point where you're thinking about what you shouldn't be thinking about, which causes you to make a mistake. So it's an inner focus. It's a focus that your technique is more important than the person you're blocking. And if you stay true to your knitting and hold your technique solid, you'll usually be just fine.
Coach, I know the game has become probably easier to study than it ever has been in terms of understanding the scheme, the X's and O's, all the things that are going to happen. I see a lot of guys, and when I talk to coaches on the podcast, they talk about early on in their careers making that mistake that, you know, the scheme was the most important thing, and kind of getting caught up in that and becoming schemers, which means they're changing what they're doing all the time for their players. But, you know, you're in a league where you do see, a ton of freak athletes, like you mentioned, coming at you. You have to adjust. You have to do all those things. So, you know, taking things to the elite level you're at, you know, and learning from that, what's the recommendation for coaches out there today? It doesn't even have to be, you know, the O-line game, guys.
Yeah, the game is constantly changing. I'm going to kind of talk about what you were saying there a little bit about how you don't change. The game is constantly changing. The game will be different a year from now than it is today. Those who don't believe that, there's some that say, there's nothing new in football. Well, that's not right. There is. There's new things all the time. If there was nothing new in football, we'd all still be running the single wing every play. You know, there are inventors in football. There are creators in football. And those inventors and those creators in football gain an edge. I'm always amazed. I do a lot of Glazier clinics, and I'm always amazed. I'll go to a Glazier clinic, and there'll be some guy in his 60s or 70s sitting up there in the front row taking notes on his pad. His pad is full of notes, and I love finding out about that guy. And by and large, those guys are winners. My God, that guy's legendary. You know, he sits right up in front of Glazier and takes notes on all the new stuff that's going on. And I believe that. I believe it's true. I encourage that. I encourage everyone to come up with their own answers. I think that's a beauty. One thing I'm doing, in this year of time off, one thing I'm doing about I got on Twitter, like I said, about 3 weeks ago. I got over 6,000 followers in 3 weeks. And I said, hey, I love speaking at assemblies and corporate events. You know, if you want me to do it, I'll come to you, right? Well, I got 10 of them in a couple weeks. So I'm going all over the country. I'm doing all these assemblies. I'm doing corporate speaking. And that's all coming up. And what I'm going to enjoy doing most is when I'm doing football with guys. I really enjoy doing football. I've been speaking at these Glazer clinics for over 30 years now. And what I love doing at the end of these seminars, I usually talk 5 hours on pass protection is what I talk about, teaching in pass protection. And at the end of the time, and there's some runs in there, but at the end of the time, I want coaches to think on their own, come up with their own answers, you know, and learn the theories and basics, principles behind the biomechanical movements of football. And, you know, the psychological aspects and the competitive aspects, I enjoy all those parts of it. But I really, so what's my advice to a coach? My advice to a coach is stay ahead of the curve. You know, the thinking outside the box, it was kind of a popular phrase. It's kind of worn out, but it is outside the box. If you go to a clinic to find out an opponent runs a certain offense or a certain defense, and you want to find out how you can do it so you can be as good as they are, you might not. They were probably good at it because they figured it out for themselves. And by the time you figure them out, they're going to be on to the next thing. But that's my thought anyways. There'll be other coaches who look at it completely different, you know, and that's fine. But I do know this. I do know that there are no dinosaurs walking around. I do know that that the world and the game is constantly evolving. This is great. When I was in grad school, I took a statistics class by a gentleman named Dr. Paul Games, who was a professor at Penn State when I was getting my master's degree there in exercise physiology. And he taught this statistics class, and he did a last class lecture, which used to be more common back then. Basically, they give you the advice of, you know, life advice. And he finished off the class in that last class, and he said, let me tell you this. This was in 1982. He said, let me tell you this. The technology revolution is coming. Now, this is really before computers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. They were just starting to become popular, right? He said, the technology revolution is coming. You can either jump on the train or get run over by it. And I've never forgotten that. He could see the future. And what a great piece of advice for a young person like I was, that the game of football is going to be different 5 years from now than it is now. And if you're not up and current ahead of it, you're going to get run over.
Coach, what are some of those trends you see right now developing that you think coaches need to pay attention to?
Well, I think there's scheme. I think there's technique. I think those are really the biggest areas. Every league is different, you know. The influence of the high school and colleges into pro football right now with the RPOs and zone reads, how you're able to run them in NFL rules and not get your quarterback hurt and do those kind of things. Those are all kind of different, and those are exciting right now. That's kind of what I was enjoying at this point in my career. But I done it all. I mean, when I was in Cincinnati, I was a crazy guy that used to, split out tackles out on the numbers and unbalanced lines. And I was the first guy to send an offensive line in motion. Dennis Rowland was his name. You know, just all kinds of things like that. One of the things that I love is about 5 years ago, I was starting to run a counter read, you know, out of the shotgun. You know, against spread offense, three wides, a running play where you could run against seven in the box. You know what I mean? You hand it off, you pull the backside guard and tackle. Old Washington Redskins play where you read the defensive end, and maybe someone did. Maybe someone's going to call in and say, oh, no, I've been running it for 100 years. Great. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't. I never saw it, right? Shotgun counter, read the defensive end. And we were running that. And, my God, every time someone got in a bare front, we checked to that thing. And, oh, my God, we're getting 20 yards of crack on the damn thing, it seemed like. And I would have never thought that the old Washington Redskins play was the answer to too many in the box in the spread offense, one of the answers. And so you just keep looking, you just keep thinking. And that's kind of what I enjoy.
From the technique side, what are some of the biggest things, at least coaching it, that you've seen, you know, here recently, especially, you know, player safety has really become something at the forefront. Not that it always hasn't been, but, you know, we're looking at things differently there too. I'm starting to see a lot of trends, but how have you seen or yourself experienced that change in how you're teaching technique and some of the things you're doing there?
Well, I think you're constantly changing. There's, you know, you're constantly evolving with techniques, obviously more with the hands now than the headgear. And you have to keep changing. You have to keep evolving. You know, this is kind of, I kind of look at it this way. I'm close to 6 years old right now. And I like telling young coaches at clinic this story, right? That I said, you probably hear those old coaches say, you know, geez, coaches these days, or player kids these days are terrible. My God, when we were kids, you know. And I tell the young coaches at the clinics I speak at, and even the schools that I talk at for kids in the audience, I say, let me tell you something. When I was your age 50 years ago, 45 years ago, I heard the same thing. I heard the old teachers grouchy saying, oh, geez, kids these days. Blah, blah, blah. I believe this, right? Kids have not changed since the inception of the Homo sapien, right? That they want to be special. They want to identify themselves. They want to be unique, right? And they want to grow. And in their uniqueness, they want to be individuals, obviously. And you know what? The last thing they want is for the older people to steal their uniqueness. I'll never forget when I was a kid, my God, we used to wear like khaki pants, those were in. And then our parents are wearing, what the hell? So then kids went to jeans, right? And then their parents are wearing. Then they start wearing low-down jeans, you know? And, you know, it goes, I remember my mother saying, I will never own a microwave oven, you know? And I mean, you see old people at the senior citizens home walk around with earbuds in, and, you know, you see things you thought you'd never see before. All those things, I swear, if I had the knowledge how to invest in the stock market, I'd just invest in everything that kids like. Because whatever kids like, the older people end up wanting to share in the fountain of youth, and they become interested in it too. And but my point is this. After that long story, right, that if you find yourself as an older coach saying, geez, kids these days aren't the same, it's either time to change with them or time to move on.
Coach, I appreciate you sharing all these stories with us today. Definitely learning from being entertained too. The question I like to ask last, was it's designed around one of my favorite books, Finding the Winning Edge by Bill Walsh. And this is a question I ask all coaches at the end of the podcast. And it's, what's the, you know, if you look at all the things you've done or you're doing as a coach in this profession, what's the one thing you really point to that helps your guys, your unit, your team find the winning edge?
Well, you brought up that book, which the Bill Walsh book, Finding the Winning Edge, which was an excellent book. I read that when I was a young coach, and I really enjoyed it. And one of the things you get out of that book, and I wish I could quote it exactly, but there's a quote in there where Walsh talks about the importance of being unique. It's something to the effect of, you know, if we're all doing the same thing, then none of us are trying, or something like that. You know, I forget. Maybe you know, Keith, what the quote is. But
I'll have to look it up.
But that's basically the thought there. And I think the best thing that I offer in coaching is, one, I'm going to watch the guy you have to block, and I'm going to watch you, and I'm going to study him, and I'm going to chart him. And my goal is to help you reach your dreams, to be the player you want to be and block the guy you have to block. I think coaches, really, we're in a service business. And the joy that we get in coaching is by players self-actualizing and getting excited about their accomplishments. And it's really a second level appreciation, bigger than the championships for me, bigger than the winning, certainly not as hard as a losing, but to me, the most beautiful part in coaching is saying, hey, I'm going to give everything I can for you to reach your dreams as a player. And that's what I usually offer to my guys. I tell them that, and I'd be disappointed if I didn't.
I love it, Coach. Before we go, I know you're doing some neat things right now. I've seen your Twitter following grow. When you first came on, I saw a couple hundred followers. I'm like, yeah, this can't be Paul Alexander. But then it was up to thousands, like, instantly. So I'm like, okay, it's probably Paul Alexander.
But it's fun. I know. I got no one to coach right now. I'm coaching a freaking computer.
But you're doing some really good stuff on there. You shared your Twitter handle. I'll repeat it right now. It's at Coach Paul Alex. Tell us a little bit about, you know, you mentioned speaking around the country. I guess if coaches are interested, how do they get in contact?
Yeah, go to my website, coachpaulalexander.com, and send me a message, and we'll figure out how I can get there. I don't break the bank. I just really enjoy doing it, and you get me there, and, you know, you'll be surprised how low the fee is, really. But I enjoy it.
Coach, thanks for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. Best of luck to you and your new endeavors, and I'm looking forward to your next book.
Great. Thanks, Keith. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.